Welcome to the Clappers. This is Andrew Young.
And I am Carl Quinn.
Now, Carl, my feeling is this.
Go on.
When I say one, I mean you, post something on social media, okay, say a menu with an item on said menu that may make people who are particularly squeamish feel a little disgusted. I am of the opinion that you, and when I say you, I mean everybody, should only post said item if they have eaten said item. Otherwise, it's like a form of coitus interruptus.
So really, I need to have earned my tripes. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Earned
your
stripes.
Yeah, that's very nice. So you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
I do know what you're talking about. You're talking about the little pic I took of a menu item at a Chinese hot pot place I visited last night. And it was ox of penis.
And ox of penis?
Ox of penis.
Not penis of ox?
Sorry.
Carl, am I right in presuming that you did not try the penis of ox?
I did not try the penis of ox, Andrew.
In the future, if you're going to insist on posting these things, you need to slip one between your lips, bite down, and swallow.
It's not going to happen.
Well, then you're not allowed to post.
Am I going to have the trachea that was on the menu. There were some very, very scary things here at David's Hot Pot Restaurant in Melbourne Town. Big vats, big metal vats, split down the middle,
penises.
And one half, not a penises. One half is broth, the other half is boiling chili oil with Sichuan pepper and...
Pungent.
Pungent, indeed. And a remarkable thing.
Enjoyable.
You drop your vegetables, your meat, your...
Oh, it's just one of those make your own dinner places.
Yes, it's like...
I'm not going there. God's sake.
Other restaurants...
Do you have to collect your own cutlery and do the washing up as well?
Well, somebody did comment that they thought they had seen people bringing their own napkins. It's not true, though. The napkins were just hiding in a drawer in the table. It's a funny place, and, you know, oddly... I find it not entirely satisfying to be sort of...
Making your own dinner?
Well, not so much making your own dinner. I'm okay with that. You know, Korean barbecue place. I love that. Okay. I don't mind that at all. But you spend a lot of time fishing around in this broth trying to find the bits of whatever you've dropped in there.
And ending up with who knows what.
It's a bit like that.
I don't go out to dinner anywhere near as often as you.
No?
No. But I did go out to dinner the other night. I went out with a friend of mine and... the place that we both thought of in our minds and then seemed to say simultaneously, and you're going to love how adventurous I am, was Mario's.
Oh, really?
Mario's.
Pushing the envelope there.
Indeed I was. People who remember the Fitzroy of yore will remember there used to be lots of great places on Brunswick Street, but that is sadly diminishing and has been for a long time. Mario's is still there and has been there for over 30 years. And I have to say, and I'm a little trepidatious perhaps about revealing this to the great world of podcast listenership.
But, how bad can it be?
You be the judge, okay? I am often the judge. This time I'm passing the gavel.
I'm just going to get my gavel and my wig. I've got my wig on.
I'm passing it to you.
Address the bench, Mr. Young.
2 years ago, April 2016, Mario celebrated 30 years of providing excellent food, drink, service, exhibition space to the people of Fitzroy, but wider Melbourne. All prices were the 1986 price.
Wow.
The 1986 price. So omelets stuffed with goodness, $5.50. All pasta dishes were about $5. Lamb, chicken, ribeyes for $8.50.
Really?
So I had a ribeye for breakfast.
For breakfast?
I've never had a ribeye steak before in my life. And I had one, big, thick, fat, juicy fella.
For breakfast.
For breakfast with potatoes. I think I might have had an omelette as well. A couple of cups of coffee. I have to say the booze wasn't at 1986 prices. So I only had a half bottle of claret for breakfast. I went back at lunch and I think I had some fettuccine and maybe some bacon and toast. And then when I was lining up for dinner... Because there was a big queue. It was the only time I'll ever queue was to get 986 prices. Mario Di Pasquale spots me, he does, and says, "Now, listen."
Did he grab you by the shirt collar? Walk you to the curb?
You've been here. Look, I know. I'm just with these people. I'm just hanging out, talking to them. When they go in, I'll just go to the bookshop next door and loiter for half an hour and not buy anything. And so when the people I was with finally got to the front, he said, no, just go in. So I went three times.
That's outrageous.
It was wonderful. It was perhaps the most wonderful experience I've ever had in my life. And since then, I felt a slight pang every time I've walked past Mario's and not actually gone in and bought anything. So any opportunity I have to spend some 2016 Australian currency, I will spend it at Mario's because I really feel like I owe them.
So these are meals of atonement you're having, really.
But they're really, it was a great meal. Wow. It was really generous with the blanched spinach. Like normal people use that as a garnish, but I had a really nice steaming pile of blanched spinach alongside my sauteed potatoes and steak. And they have, of course, the best beer in Christendom. They have the Cooper's Rouge, which is my preference, as everybody knows. So that was good. I'm not telling to people to go to Mario's. I'm just saying that's what I, when I can, I do. I go to other places when I can, but I think the next two times I go and have any meal anywhere, it's going to have to be at Mario's.
Well, I tend to go to the cinema. That's what
I
do.
This cinema.
Yeah. I lurk there in the dark, you know. One of the films that I have seen recently that I really want to spread the love on is a thing called Leave No Trace.
Yep.
It's not on in many places. Mm-hmm. It may not be on for very long. It's been on a couple of weeks. It's at the Nova in Melbourne and it's at the Dendy Newtown in Sydney. It might be on a few other independent places around the country. I'm not sure, but it's a gorgeous film, and I really, really urge people who are open to a bit of slow-moving indie cinema to go and check it out. It's about a father and a daughter who are living in the wilds in the forest outside Portland, Oregon. Ben Foster, he plays the father, and a young New Zealand actress called Thomasin McKenzie. And they're there in the woods. They're in survivalist mode. They practice hiding from people. They have a sort of tarpaulin set up.
Crossbows?
No crossbows. No, there's no weaponry. Well, there's knives, but they're for hunting and, you know, the like.
Haircuts.
Haircuts. Flints. They use flints for
shaving.
The hair.
You want to be spruce, even if you're a survivalist.
It's very hard to get that George Michael trimmed beard with a Bowie knife, but you know he does his best. And so they're in the woods, and it sort of only gradually becomes apparent why they're there. But for the first quarter of the film, they're in the woods and they're living this kind of really bare bones existence, but it's kind of beautiful in its way. They go into town every so often to get supplies. He's a war veteran, and he picks up his pension check and he uses that and he gets his prescription medicine that he's been prescribed, and he trades it to others to basically get their basic supplies. It's kind of just matter of fact. There's no sort of judgment about whether this is a good thing, a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they're in the woods, and then they get found. Yep. And that's the great sort of dramatic moment of the film, is that they're discovered, so everything then shifts.
It's not a drill.
He's got him.
Stand up.
You alone out here?
My daughter's with me.
Dad?
Let's go.
Can you tell me where you live? In the park?
the authorities called in. They quite reasonably go, what the hell's going on here? There's this guy and this young girl living in the woods. What's the nature of the relationship between them? Is she in danger? You know, is there some sort of sexual predation? Is it what's going on? They intervene. And then they basically come to the conclusion that actually the girl's okay. Then it becomes, well, what's her education like? Turns out she's ahead of her peers of that age. Socially, she doesn't have much going on because it's basically her and her dad.
Yeah.
There's no mum.
No,
the mum is gone off the scene. And it's really then about them being forced to adapt to the world outside of the woods, to civilization, for want of a better word. Like, it's a bit like Mowgli in the Jungle Book kind of scenario,
thinking
in a way.
More your Japanese infantryman in 1967, finally finding out the Second World War is finished and believing it, and being brought into a world of transistors and
something
and
like that. It's not that they don't know about the world; it's that they've opted out of the world.
Yeah.
Well, really, the father who we
Swiss
discover,
Family Robinson.
Well, he's a war vet and he's traumatized.
Yeah.
So he really struggles to deal with the modern world. His daughter she adores him.
Yep.
He adores her. Their relationship is just gorgeous, really. But there's a problem in that she doesn't have contact with other people her age, and that can't go on forever. And
no.
You kind of know that when the authorities step in, they've actually got her interests at heart. And in a way, they're doing the right things. And it's one of the things I really like about this film is that it doesn't cast the authorities as evil and blundering and heavy-handed.
Yeah.
They operate within the paradigm that they have available to them, and it's perhaps not as subtle as it could be, but it does its best. And the dad is doing his best, and the daughter is doing her best, but there's a certain point at which those things do not align anymore.
Yeah.
It's just a gorgeous film. Mm. It's made by Deborah Granick, who is probably best known as the director of Winter's Bone, which was a film that catapulted Jennifer Lawrence from the ranks of sort of, you know, vaguely known child actor to what she is now, which is quite well-known,
well
I believe.
Known. She's a well-known actress, Jennifer. I know who it is that you're talking about.
Well, when you clearly say Jennifer
Lawrence,
she's well-known.
I know who you're talking about. Okay.
And it's just a really beautiful film about a relationship that has to evolve, even though it's painful. And in a sense, it's kind of like it's the story of every father-daughter relationship in some ways.
Yeah.
But it's also a very particular story.
Yeah.
And astonishingly, it's based on a true story.
Now, what happens at the end of this film?
She shoots him.
Yeah, because you say it's beautiful and that it's lovely. And
no, she doesn't shoot him.
Fred
she definitely
Armisen
doesn't shoot
Carrie,
him.
What's her name? Carrie Brown.
Carrie Brownstein.
Carrie Brownstein, yeah. So they're in it.
A couple of hipsters.
Shopkeepers.
Yeah, they're hipsters. Yeah, that's right.
So she shoots him.
There is
she
no
dad.
Well, they shoot each other.
So they both. That's poignant, isn't it?
Oh, it's
both
very poignant,
on a beautiful rock overlooking a valley.
Yeah.
Both dead, gunshot wounds, and then a wolf, a lone wolf, comes along and just licks at the nostrils to try to rouse, and they're dead. So we know.
So that's a good ending. So then the wolf eats them because
Of course, it's a wolf.
It's
hungry like the wolf.
Oh.
None so hungry as a lone wolf.
Apparently, you've seen the director's cut.
I have on my phone.
The version I've seen doesn't play quite like that,
but
it is absolutely beautiful. And I would urge you, if any of that sounds appealing, to go and see it at a cinema, because Deborah Granick's Winter's Bone is really, really hard to find, not at the cinema. It
so
doesn't
you're saying that
really...
this film is like a beautiful scenery.
Absolutely gorgeous.
And
absolutely
so it should
gorgeous.
Be seen on a big screen.
That's what I would say, yes.
Is your dad in the service?
He was.
Do you feel safe living with your dad?
We didn't need to be rescued.
Your dad needs to provide you shelter and a place to live.
He did.
It's not a crime to be unhoused, but it's illegal to live on public land.
We have found an option.
Are we gonna be okay here?
Still think our own thoughts.
Keep pedaling. Look where you want to go.
School is about social skills, not just intellectual ones.
I think it might be easier on us if we try to adapt.
We're wearing their clothes, we're in their house, we're eating their food, we're doing their work. We have adapted. First of a thousand,
right on the wall. Pack your things.
Did you even try? Because I can't tell. Somebody unspeakable love.
Where's your home?
With my dad. I don't want to leave. Same thing that's wrong with you isn't wrong with me.
Carl, I went to an exhibition of art.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Bald Archies.
Right.
It's put on every year, and I've never heard of it. I've never seen it before, but
I've
every
heard
year
of it,
on.
But I don't know what it is.
Well, it's a, I suppose, a little gentle, humorous, satirical dig at the Archibald.
Mm.
The Archibald. Which
does
is
it have a structuring
prize.
Conceit though? Well, is it portraiture?
It's portraiture. Right. It's portraiture of like in the Archibald of well known people. So of course there's a portrait of Jimmy Barnes.
Right.
Right. Everywhere you go, there has to be something.
Next year there'll be one of you.
I hope so.
Mm.
I expect so. The winner is chosen by a cockatoo named Lord. I believe the cockatoo perches on the arms of his or her master and then flies to the painting. Most appealing perches there, that's the winner. Okay? Now, most of these portraits are, you could say, grotesque or perhaps naive. The art is more along the cartoon caricature
yeah.
style than the fine art that we see exhibited by Yvette Coppersmith, for instance, this year's winner of the Archibald Prize. There's a few of Craig, it's topical, so there's a few of Craig McLaughlin, obviously. There's quite a lot of Tony Abbott, of Peter Dutton, and other well-known political personages. There's lots of nudeness and lewdness. So if nudeness and lewdness offends you, well, you should go anyway. Be offended. Man, there's a portrait here, for instance, called Pull My Finger. And I think we all know what happens when you pull someone's finger. So most of them were sold, which is interesting, given the level of expertise that a lot of the artists exhibit. And their prices are high, high for maybe you or I, but maybe not high for lovers of art. But it's on at the Victoria Hotel
right.
in Little Collins Street. Victoria yeah. Hotel has always been a rare jewel in a capital city, in that it is a very reasonably priced hotel that is not, as far as I know, is not disgusting. I've picked up people.
I've only ever been there to go to comedy.
Well, same, but I've picked people up from there who were staying there and had a quick peek, and it's fine, but very reasonably priced, right in the middle of the city, which, like I say, is rare for any capital city. There are artistical allusions to Delacroix and Jericho and some of these paintings, but like I say, prepare for some disgustingness, which I think is not necessarily a bad thing from time to time when you go to see an exhibition or when you go to a restaurant with Carl. So, yes, go along. It's called the Bald Archie Prize. It's $5 to get in, okay? $5, and it's downstairs in the ballroom area of the Victoria Hotel in Little Collins Street. And I hope you're offended and have some fun.
So, Andrew.
Yes.
Have you heard of Ladies in Black?
I have indeed heard of Ladies in
Black.
Are
you excited by Ladies in Black? I mean, I'm talking about the movie here.
Red-blooded, debonair Australian male is not excited by Ladies in Black. I used to spend all my free and paid time at David Jones as a youth. So, yes. I know about this. It was a stage play and a musical with music by Tim Finn. And I read a review of it that was very well written, and it spoke highly of the costumes and the actings and the music and the sounds great.
Morning, Miss Cartwright.
Morning, Miss Cartwright.
Miss Baines, Mrs. Williams, this is Miss Miles. These ladies will show you the ropes.
Good afternoon, ladies.
You must be the new jeune fille.
Some help I can use during this season.
Who's that?
Magda, one of them refos.
Refugees. Migrants.
Based on a novel by Madeleine St. John.
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad you said that, because that's how you should say it.
Mm.
That's how you should say
it. Not St. John.
No. For God's sake. Really? What's wrong with people? Honestly, I just let's
I'm
go
gonna,
somewhere
I'm
else
I'm
going
to look up the correct pronunciation of it on my Google search engine and see what it says.
Your engine. So, yes, it's a novel, and it took a long time to come to the screen.
It's I'm not sure how long it took, but yes, it took
I believe it took 25 years.
25?
I'm pretty sure I heard the man himself, Bruce Beresford talking to my man, Philip Adams, on this very topic. They love to get together and have a bit of a talk, Bruce Beresford,
old
Philip Adams.
Those two.
And, well, they go way back, don't they?
They go way back.
Barry McKenzie.
Oh, wow.
And so he said it's like 25 years to get it happening, which is, I think is very demoralizing for anybody who wants to make a motion picture, that it takes half a lifetime of an unhealthy person, but maybe a third or a quarter of a lifetime of a healthy person.
Probably fair to say that it's not the only thing he was working on for 25 years.
Oh, he's put out his autobiography too, yes, correct.
Yes. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think you need to take those kind of 25 years in the making kind of things with a little bit of a grain of salt, but it is true. They can take a hell of a long time to come to fruition. Anyway, it's well worth the effort, I would say.
Yeah.
It's a gentle story.
Simple?
Relatively simple. It doesn't have...
Good. We don't want sort anything of, too
busy. It's not going to startle the horses.
No. Good.
It doesn't have... Not that there are many horses.
I was going to say, are there many horses
in this
film?
Not that there are many horses in goods
horse
department store, as it's called.
Of course not. You wouldn't have horses in goods department. It's not Harrods.
We might have porcelain horses.
Yeah.
But no. And it's so the storyline is quite sort of gentle, really. The central character is a young girl called Lisa. She's 17. She's in that transition phase between finishing high school and doing whatever comes next. She hopes to go to university.
Yep.
She, of course, is eagerly awaiting the publication of her scores.
The matric
out on the notice board at the Herald, where she'll be there at 11:30 at night. This is set in 1959. So yep. Her parents are played by Shane Jacobson.
Yes.
And Susie Porter.
Oh, Susie Porter.
Your fave.
Oh, I love Susie Porter. I was going to see this film anyway, right?
Yeah.
When I was watching the shorts, the trailer at the cinema when I was seeing that film, The Wife.
Mm.
And I was laughing like, what's that guy? Andrew Young. I was laughing
really?
Like Andrew Young in the cinema as if he's by himself.
My God, were you embarrassed?
No, I was having a great time. But I was already going, yeah, I'm going to see. Look, I read a great review of this of the play. It spoke costumes, dancing, music. It was a great review. And I thought, man, I'm definitely going to see this play. But I think the review, well, I think that it had already been on in Melbourne. This was a review in Brisbane, so I missed out. So I was kind of already going to go and see. But once I saw Susie Porter, I thought, well, I'm going to go twice. I'm going to come twice to see Susie Porter.
Anyway, so Lisa, played by Angourie Rice, gets a holiday job.
Not Angourie.
She has not known the pit. No, she gets a job. She gets a job in the women's clothing department at Goods.
At Goods,
aka
David Jones.
And she works alongside a woman called Faye, played by Rachel Taylor, who's this rather gorgeous but, you know, fairly ordinary working girl who just keeps bumping up against the wrong kind of men, sort of groping oafs, I guess you would call
them. Brutes.
Groping brutes. Let's call them
groping brutes.
And
so she bumps up against the occasional grope,
or the
common groping brute. But
the lesser groping brute.
Unlike other gorgeous, attractive women, she doesn't like
not
bumping
much
up against a
not
groping
much
brute.
No.
This is unusual.
She wants something a little bit more sophisticated.
Classy.
A bit classier.
Articulate.
And there's a sort of transitional moment where Lisa is reading Anna Karenina, and at first all the other girls think she's a bit stuck up,
snob.
This girl. And then she passes the book to Faye, who then becomes utterly entranced. And so it's sort of her first introduction to
odd
European
book
culture.
Odd book to choose for a woman making a transition like that. But okay.
And meanwhile,
right.
Lisa
okay.
then also works in the high-end boutique gowns department, which is run by a woman called Magda, played by Julia Ormond. Mm. And Magda is a Slovenian refugee, or as some of the other ladies in the store call her, that bloody refo. And so she's much more cultured, and so she's sort of the entree for both Lisa and later Faye into a different world, a more European world, and one that is about talking about art and culture and clothes and drinking wine at lunch.
And how does Faye get on?
She struggles at first.
Yeah.
But she gets there in the end. You know, she meets a lovely Hungarian
aristocrat.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Racing car driver's moustache.
He has a beard.
Okay. All right. Can't have everything.
Yeah.
Cravat.
Definitely. Oh,
nice. Nosey's wine.
Nosey's wine.
I love the sound of this guy. Dashing, yeah. Debonair, yeah. Nosey's wine, yeah. Articulate,
I think
well
his name is Andros Jung.
Ah, good dancer then. Good dancer. Loves music. Well, isn't that, look, I tell you what, I think what you're telling me so far is lovely, that the gorgeous young woman rejects the groping brutes. Mm. And chooses the perhaps man of more mature years with he's a man of her own age,
roughly.
Which I mean, that's good too, right? Yes. And he, but what's good about it is that, you know, she chooses somebody with good manners and good taste and class and style and dash over a groping brute, which, I mean, would that the world were like that, Carl? Alas. We know that the world is not like that.
Pockets of the world, I think, are possibly like that.
Pockets of the world are possibly like that. Yeah.
Oh, it was all over me. They only want one thing. All of them.
I mean, what do you expect? They're going to kiss your hand and throw their coats over drains?
Sorry, excuse me.
Rudy needs assistance.
I wish to find a girlfriend. Mm. I want an Australian girl.
An Australian?
Some of them are very beautiful.
The cultivated ones have gone away.
Magda, there is someone.
She's rough. She's no style.
Perfect.
Do you speak English?
Of course. And Hungarian and German. And some French and Russian. A drink?
There's no question. It's a bit of a fairy tale. It is.
I'm completely fine with that fairy tale.
It's like an It's like an idealized version of the Australia of the past, but also of the Australia of the present. In which we're open to refugees. We're open to cultures from elsewhere. Yeah. We, you know.
Yeah, that's the fairy tale part, right?
It isn't. I mean, you know, you look at it and you kind of. Because it's set in 1959, you kind of go, yes, look at how sort of hostile and resistant the attitudes were then, and you kind of go, you know, things like cured meats and olives are incredibly exotic. Okay, now they're symbols of how much we've sort of turned more outward in the world, and I know that it's easy to sort of conflate. The food of immigrants with a more broad acceptance, and it's a bit too easy to do so.
It is.
But there is something in that. It's a nice symbolism. It's a nice, easy symbolism, and perhaps too easy at times. But you kind of get that sort of sense of like, oh, look how hostile they were, and thank goodness we're not like that.
Yeah.
But then, of course, right in this very moment, we have that kind of hostility playing out yet again.
Yeah, we do.
And it does with every wave of immigration.
And I want to say on very, very succinctly, briefly, with terse, spare prose, lean, if you will.
I'm leaning. Does that help?
Thank you.
Help me concentrate.
Helps restore the equilibrium.
I'm tilting to the left.
The gyroscope has gone off its rails. So my feeling is that I hear people talking about refugees and they're patting themselves on the back for being accepting. We accept refugees because they have so much to give us. They've got the great food that they've Vietnamese restaurants and the great food that they brought to us and the cheap labour in Shepparton.
And the ox of penis.
Yeah, and of course.
The penis of ox.
But I feel that we should accept refugees because it's the right thing to do and not because of what we can do for them and because we're a compassionate, kind... Well, because we should strive to be a compassionate and kind society, not because we can get stuff off them, but because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that's absolutely...
Yeah, that's all you have to need to say.
That's absolutely right.
Carl says yes. Carl agrees with me, okay? That's all you need to know about. I'm looking forward to this film, Ladies in Black, especially the fantasy of the debonair, dashing gentleman who can dance and knows his wine being the preferred partner over the groping brute. Fantastic stuff.
Film holds up a mirror to us, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. All right. Thank you for listening to us, the Clappers. You'll be hearing from us very soon.